Joe from Essendon has text through, more Blighty. He's articulate, passionate, authentic and puts you in the locker room, but more important, one of the best both sides of the fence, player and coach. Ben Guthrie is tweeting that Tom McDonald is on the plane to Sydney. Marty Hoare, Billy Stretch and Charlie Spargo are all bound for Thursday night footy as well. He's saying that the Demons are taking a squad of 25, so some decisions to be made at selection as to how they will front up. Bruce McAvaney is going to join me on the other side of the news. Winks farewell coming on Saturday.
Harley Heaven, stop dreaming and start riding.
Morning, it's Chris McKenzie with SEN News. The final moments of Justine Damon's life have been played out in an eventful first day of the murder trial for a former US police officer. It's been revealed the Australian woman phoned her husband from outside their Minneapolis home to say officers had arrived just a few seconds before she was fatally shot. US casino operator Wynn Resorts has abruptly abandoned takeover talks with Australian rival Crown overnight. The Las Vegas giant walked away, blaming a leak of the potential $10 billion buyout plan, which had prompted Crown shares to soar by almost 20% yesterday. Telstra workers, including technicians, have walked off the job for the second time in as many months. The action is part of an ongoing pay dispute, with Shane Murphy from the Communications Union saying the telco is refusing to budge on its offer of a 1.5% increase.
The customers, obviously, if they're expecting a technician to turn up at the home, will be affected. We've been left with little option, unfortunately, where Telstra has continually refused to return to the bargaining table, even though the union has written to Telstra week in, week out.
The strike coincides with national action from the ACTU that will see thousands of people marching at 14 sites across the country. Briefly today, the future of the controversial Adani coal mine project is now in the hands of the Queensland government after environmental plans were approved by Canberra. And US police are yet to reveal the identity of a 44-year-old Australian man who's been killed after being struck by a pickup truck while cycling on a New Mexico highway. SEN.com.au Sport next.
Kickstart holiday fun at Kmart with their great range of the hottest toys at irresistible prices, like Marvel Avengers Deluxe movie figure at $24. Head into Kmart today.
Joe Danaher is expected to train with the main group at Essendon today for the first time this season. The All-Australian was spotted having a few beers on the weekend as he recovers from a calf injury. But Bombers coach John Worsfold says it's not an issue.
The understanding I have is that Joe had a couple of drinks at dinner. He's not injured anymore. He's back in full workload. So that would not impact his return to play at all.
And Tottenham striker Harry Kane has suffered an ankle injury in his side's 1-0 win over Manchester City in the Champions League quarterfinals this morning. In the other game, Liverpool defeated Porto 2-0. Weather coming up.
Real Income Protection Insurance helps secure your income if you can't work due to illness or injury. Search Real Income Protection Insurance today. Read the PDS. Issued by Hanover Life Re of Australasia Limited.
Broken down car in the left-hand emergency lane to look out for on the Calder Freeway. It's heading inbound just past Keilor Road. Crews are yet to arrive on the scene. Still seeing delays, though, on the Monash Freeway from Eastlink through to the Domain Tunnel. And delays on the Westgate from the Ring Road merge to Williamstown Road. Clears up over the bridge, but then slows from the Balti through to the Burnley. Did you know Gumtree Cars is number one for privately listed cars? So when you're looking to buy one or sell one, list it on Gumtree Cars today, Australia's local marketplace. That's latest SEN Sky Traffic.
The Match Committee with Sam McClure and Terry Wallace, tomorrow from 6.
Happy Tint. Happy Tint your home, your office, your car. Call 1-800-HAPPY-TINT. Rain, hail or shine, if you're digging for a living, the conditions are always perfect at Supergroups, Victoria's number one Kubota construction dealer.
Early showers and a top of 16 on the way today, partly cloudy and 18 tomorrow, mostly sunny, 23 the top on Friday. Right now it's 12 degrees.
Powered by a 100% Australian electricity and gas retailer. That's Red Energy. Switch today. Doncaster BMW. Beyond your expectations. This is your town. This is your station. This is Waitley on SEN.
In a moment, Bruce McAvaney will join me. He'll anchor the Channel 7 broadcast of Winks Farewell on Saturday at Royal Randwick. We have the takeover of 1377 Winx Plus. David Gately is coming to Sydney with me. We'll have you there for the whole day. So a retrospective from 9 in the morning, 11 o'clock the live coverage starts. It'll take you all the way through to 6 to savour what shapes as one of the great days of Australian sports. Essendon plays on Saturday afternoon against the Lions. John Worsfold, well, he's got the stocks coming back, Hooker and Danaher. So where and when? Well, for Hooker, it's now.
He's available now for selection. So he's ticked all his boxes. And a couple of other players, Matty D, they're available for selection. So if he doesn't get picked in the seniors, he'll definitely play VFL.
Joe Danaher out there early this morning. How far away is he?
Not far, no. So he's pretty much back in close to full training, doing full workloads. I'm not sure the exact time frame. Maybe next week he could be available to play, but whether that's limited minutes. So whether he'd be available for AFL selection, I'm not sure yet.
So Hooker now and Danaher soon. As for the midfield battle, Lachie Neale looms large over everything that involves the Lions at the moment.
Our midfield group, you know, they took on one of the best midfield groups on the weekend, last weekend, and performed really well. So we're really confident that we'll take on Brisbane's midfield and match them with the same intensity we threw up at Melbourne last week.
John Worsfold with Essendon to play the Lions on the weekend. Your messages this morning, 0433 98 11 16. Paddy Dangerfield expanding on why it drives him to distraction, the contact below the knees rule and the dissenting views that have come through. Wade, Paddy is wrong. I've umpired Auskick and under-10s for 4 years and players must stay on their feet. They cannot go to ground to get the ball. It is a free kick. Completely disagree. If we're using what juniors are taught, then it's equally relevant to don't go to ground. Stay on your feet. Don't slide in. Simple. Daniel has sent through on the Dustin Martin tribunal case last night. People from other countries would be bewildered that Dustin Martin could only get a week. This is why our game is treated like a joke outside Australia. It's an expansive, a broad thought. Chris in Endeavour Hills, finally someone of significance has an opinion contrary to a rule that makes no sense and is applied incorrectly by umpires. Keep fighting the good fight, Paddy. Of course, players milk the free kicks. Part of the game is pushing the limit to get an advantage while not giving away a free kick or getting away with it. And this, is there any chance we can convince Patrick to forego what would be a successful media career post his playing days and consider a career trajectory at AFL House heading towards the CEO position? The game would be much better for it. 0433 98 11 16. Your texts will take your calls throughout the morning, 1300 736 736. Matthew Dellavedova is going to join me on a basketball front. He's had quite the tumultuous NBA season, traded in the middle stages, headed back to Cleveland, where they've been essentially cellar dwellers. He's preparing for the Boomers campaign, for the World Cup, the showpiece match at Marvel Stadium, two of them, in fact. And then beyond that, plotting what comes next in the NBA. He suffered a concussion late in the season, so relevant on that front as well. And Ray Chamberlain will be in the studio later this hour. We're living the journey of coaches, of players, and of an umpire throughout 2019. Melbourne's on the flight to Sydney. It's pretty urgent at 0-3. Tom McDonald is on that plane. They're taking the extended squad, so not tipping their hand just yet as to who will front up at the SCG. What mood will they be in? What manner? Are they ready to retrieve their season? We've read about the circle of truth, which was part of the review. Jordan Lewis took us inside the four walls on 360 last night.
I suppose when you're 0-3, the review's not really going to go nice. So we had to review the game as it sat, and it was really, really honest, which all reviews are, whether it be good or bad, and that was on Sunday. And so I think it was a really good, day, you know, Sunday and Monday, and certainly the players now understand that if we are to move forward, you cannot just do it by yourself. You have to do it with your teammates and buy into the team and understand defence and offence. You have to work as a team, and that's what we've got to do this weekend. It's a huge step forward, and it feels like, you know, from a playing point of view, the club's at ground zero. It feels like it's just been really hard and unpredictable. But the environment at the club is certainly not that way. So it's still a really good club to come to, and that's a credit to the coaching staff. But we've also got to understand that our performance is what will drive our culture forward and the feeling around the club forward. So we need to improve that dramatically. We're not playing nowhere near our best football, and we've got a lot of players that are out of form. So we need to turn that around quickly, and that was part of what Sunday was about.
Ground zero, according to Jordan Lewis and the buy-in. You can't do it individually. You have to do it as a collective. Winks on Saturday at Royal Randwick. Peter Tye was on with Kane Corns this morning on SENSA, one of the owners, just setting up exactly what this is.
We have the opportunity to send her out on a high note, hopefully on Saturday. There's no need to race her on, and there's another chapter in her life, which, her becoming a mum and starting a breeding pattern that we hope will be really good over the next few years. So we wouldn't like to see her go out on a bad note. So hopefully we get to pick and choose, and then Saturday gives us a fitting way to see her off.
So this is the farewell in the Queen Elizabeth Stakes. Hosting the coverage for Channel 7, he's lived this journey intimately, really, is Bruce McAvaney. Bruce, welcome back to SEN.
My pleasure, Jared. An exciting week.
It is. What sense of immensity do you have at the prospect of what lies in store on Saturday?
That's a good question. There's a little bit of that Olympics 2000 about it, I reckon, Jared. And we don't get a chance to say farewell too often. I mean, Black Caviar, we were there and we didn't know. The Diva, we were there and we found out. But so, this is rare air, I reckon. So I, like everyone else that loves thoroughbred racing, including yourself, has sort of had this April 13 earmark for a long time. So I think in a racing sense, nothing's been bigger in terms of expectation, anticipation, and the knowledge that this is the last time. And then you look in the general sporting sense and, you can make your own analogies. You know, is it Federer at the last time at Wimbledon or whatever? So, no, it's big, Jared. It really is, and it feels great.
Farewells in sport. There's been a few messages that have trickled through, and my mind is drawn to it as well. Is the one that sits in the back of your mind is Bradman, isn't it, as we head towards a day like this? It doesn't always in sport go to script.
No, Nita Fordham averaged 100, didn't he?
Yeah.
And got the dark of the 99.94 has become a part of our vernacular, so to speak. So, but yeah, and I guess in America, there's a little synergy here because the father of Winks, Street Cry, had a filly in America called Zenyatta who'd won her first 19 races. They'd brought her back after winning 16. She'd retired. They brought her back, and then in that 20th fateful start, a horse called Blame beat her by ahead. So things can happen. I think something has to happen for her to be beaten, Jarrett. Something unusual. It's a good field. And isn't it great that Hartnell and Happy Clapper are there? I mean, it's just so fitting. But I think something out of the ordinary has to happen. And, you live Black Caviar more than anyone. And, she was unbeatable, as it turned out. But when you look at Winks, once she found her stride from that Sunshine Coast Guineas on, I know Humidor got close, but she hasn't really. I mean, she's had narrow wins, but that's because she's been put in terribly difficult positions. No one's ever really come from behind her, so I'll be surprised if it's not the fairy tale.
It is. Hats off to the connections of Hartnell and Happy Clapper. As it turned out in Black Caviar's last race, Haylist was there. He was sort of almost a he was a beaten commodity by that stage. He wasn't the horse that he had been, but it was rather the lovely that he was there. When I saw that field come through yesterday, I thought, good on them. There's sort of a sense of theatre in that, to have the two horses that have been there most often against her enroll for the last time.
Absolutely. I mean, Happy Clapper's been second to her five times, I think, in Group 1s, and Hartnell second to her on four occasions in Group 1. So, no, I'm with you. I've been doing a bit of thinking about Farlap over the last sort of 3 months, and he had his own Happy Clapper Farlap, Night March, which, and Jerry, you won't believe this, but Happy Clapper 5 seconds and a third to Winks, and Night March 5 seconds and a third to Farlap, this is Night March, the horse that in 1929 won the Cox Plate in the Melbourne Cup, the first horse to do it, and actually beat Farlap in that Melbourne Cup. So Farlap had his own Happy Clapper way back in 1929, 30 and 31.
It's funny, isn't it, the echoes? So a lot of this at the end has been trying to find the right place, and I suspect people are turning to you on that front. Have you tried to firm up in your mind exactly where she sits, and really it is in relation to Farlap, as she eclipses everything else on the way through.
I think you're right. I think it gets down to the one. I think greater for longer. It almost gets to that point. Now, his career, of course, was tragically cut short, and not sure what would have happened after the Agua Caliente. He was going to have another run in America. And he did things that were extraordinary, you know, the four wins in the week, the big weight in the Melbourne Cup. And when you look at his record from 2,400 metres on, he's only two defeats at a mile and a half plus within those two Melbourne Cups in 29-31. So I wouldn't deny him anything. I've lived all my life thinking that you had to be at Flemington in 1930 to see the greatest horse, and I reckon I'm wrong. I do. I think that her CV is the deepest and most impressive in the history of the sport. One thing that's interesting, Joe, you know, a lot talked about, and this is not a knock on Farlap, because they can't knock Farlap because of what he has achieved, but a lot's been talked about who she beaten and the size of the fields. But so when you really look at it, she's been in one race where she's had a field of five or less, and that was at Caulfield Stakes, where she beat Blackheart Barton, he or she. So that's in her 36 wins in Australia, only one race. Now, Farlap, in his 36 Australian wins, on 22 occasions, there was a field of five or less. So, and in those two Cox plates that he won, there was a field of six and seven. So whilst I'm not saying that to in any way diminish his achievements, and you can't do that, I'm saying that things don't change too often, and in many ways she's actually, I felt, defeated probably deeper and even harder fields than he did over the years.
It's funny, the horses that move us over the years. So the first horse I loved was Better Loosen Up, and then Black Caviar was sort of that for me. Is I've heard you talk about your days as a kid in South Australia and the horses that moved you there. Is why... So the record in the end sort of tells the story, but it's the love along the way. Why has Winx grabbed you so?
The connection's a bit. It's been a bit of Deb and a bit of Peter and Richard, certainly Chris and just his emotion and the boy from Dunny Doo. So that collectively has made it even richer for us. You experienced that with Peter and Luke and how generous they were. So I've loved that bit. I love the fact that she's overcome those obstacles. Seeing is believing, and, you know, knocked over in Epsom's, can't get through in a Doncaster, couldn't possibly win a Theo Marks, all those sorts of races. Even the very first two in the streak were just extraordinary. So I've just, you know, overcoming the obstacles in the run, and I felt like I've watched something that is greater than anything I've ever seen before in thoroughbred racing. You know, Black Caviar would lead and put them away, and Light and Power would run them into the ground. But this filly was able to overcome all sorts of things. And I guess in the end too, Gerard, it's the fact that she's been doing it for so long. Look, I fell in love with her pretty early. And every time she's gone to the post, I've felt connected. I've felt an ownership, like I think so many Australians have and do. And that's the thing I've loved so much about the story, is that even though I felt, wow, how lucky I am, I felt an equality with my affection and my commitment to her with hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Australians. And I love that collectiveness and that togetherness that we're all going to feel on Saturday, and we've felt probably for the last at least 2.5 years of the four-year journey.
Do you expect to be emotional on Saturday?
I want to be professional completely. But it's going to be hard not to be a little bit. You know what it's like. You get turned on by great things, and whatever happens on Saturday, however it finishes, there's going to be emotion, there's going to be relief in one way and the joy of the win, or there's going to be the shock and the putting into terms what it means, the loss. So it's a big day. It's one you've probably got to be well prepared for, but not preconceived. I reckon in a way you've got to go in with an open mind and keep your eyes open and really respond to that. But it would be hard not to be emotional. I'm going to miss her. I really am.
Yeah.
I really am. I sort of love her in a way. I feel like she's a once-in-a-lifetime thoroughbred. And coming from where I've come from in my life with what my parents and their love for horses, it's near and dear. So, yeah, no, it's a big time.
There's a few layers to it. One is that it possibly could be Chris Waller's 100th Group 1, and how... That sort of sport, isn't it? If it did that sort of thing, he could be beyond 100, or he could be right there if Very Elegant wins the Oaks and he doesn't win one of the other Group 1s on the way. Is That would be a wonderful encapsulation of their journeys together if it happened to be that milestone for him as well.
Absolutely, and you know, very elegant and even money favourite, if not short, and she probably will win that Oaks. So there's every chance it will be his 100th. And you know, then he joins that select group of, what have we got, Smith and Cummings and Friedman and Waterhouse and Hawks. So, and you know, he's a Hall of Fame trainer without Winks. He's in Cummings and Smith's class without Winks, but he's forever going to be the man that trained Winks, as Huey's going to be the jockey that rode her, I should say. So, yeah, no, that's going to be a beautiful number, isn't it, if it comes up on Saturday.
Sydney sporting crowds are a bit different to Melbourne sporting crowds. You've been watching this build over recent weeks. What do you think the air at Royal Randwick will be?
It's a good question, and it is different. And Randwick's the SCG and Flemington's the MCG in many ways, and that's the size of the place, you know, 50,000 versus 100. But you go to the SCG cricket, you've done that so often. There is a different feel to the MCG cricket, and you go to a football match at the SCG. So, look, they are different. They're a little more, perhaps, fickle. Can I dare say that? Mm-hmm. It's got to be a big time for them to have a good time, so to speak. I mean, that's just Sydney. It's just the town that it is, whereas we think Melbourne is just true blue sport and hand on the heart. And I, look, it's a generic and it's a cliche, but a bit of it's true. But I think it's going to be a sea of blue and white. It's going to be so much fun, Jared. It's going to be a lot of chatter, a lot of anticipation. And then when the race is run, there'll be that mighty roar. And then she'll receive the reception that she deserves. Look, Randwick's the right place. She's won 19 races there, 12 group ones. You know, more than half her races she's actually won there, and more than, well, exactly half her group ones at the moment. So it's the right place. So it'll be a 20th Randwick win, hopefully, and a 13th group one at the, you know, the home of racing in New South Wales. And Randwick's history is as rich as Flemington's, except they don't have the Melbourne Cup. And that's the difference. And there's only one Melbourne Cup. And Flemington's in that privileged position, a bit like the MCG with that last Saturday for us in September.
Well, while we're talking, there are messages flowing through. I suspect for the rest of your days, Bruce, you're going to get asked the question, Winks or Cathy Freeman?
They're different, aren't they? They're so different. And I'm playing a different role, Jared, as you would know well. There's a big difference between calling and hosting, and that's the difference, I think. With Cathy, that's the biggest call I'll ever be privileged to be involved with, and I knew that the night of 2000. So for 19 years, I've realised that you know, I've sort of gone past that peak in one way, but it's different. So I'm a little less committed for the 2 minutes,
yes.
as you could well know. But so it's a good question. It's there. It's on the same plane. It's absolutely alongside of it. And in my, you know, when Maccabi Diva went for that third and Winks is fourth and Sing Black Caviar when I saw it, but as we said, we didn't know. But this, to me, I think singularly is the most anticipated race in the history of the sport. And, you know, and how would I know that? But that's in my lifetime. And I believe that sincerely because we've never really known for sure that one of these all-time greats, one of these, you know, three or four greatest horses of all time, it's their last run. And we've actually know that with Winks on Saturday. So, yeah, it's right alongside Cathy, eh? So Cathy, she's going to have to lift already, Jared.
it gives me a shiver just when you say it. Good luck with the broadcast. And it's one of those days where when you arrive on track, you just collect the memories so that they last as long as we have our minds that they'll be with us.
We're lucky, Jared, you and I. We are very lucky. All the best, mate.
See you up there. Bruce McAvaney, who will host the Channel 7 coverage of Winks' final race, the most anticipated race in the history of the sport, is how Bruce is thinking about it. 1377 Winks Plus, the station takeover to bring you all that happens at Royal Randwick on what promises to be a remarkable day of Australian sport.